And I read, you can see the chart up there, but James started out with Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 and 18. Now notice that in verse 17, the Bible says, Jesus says, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I send you till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle, so in no wise pass from the law, till all be fulfilled. Now what did Jesus say actually in verse 17? What did he say? He came to fulfill the law. Now did he do it? Was he successful? Certainly he was. He did fulfill the law. Now he hadn't fulfilled it at that point. He fulfilled it and completed it perhaps 2 or 3 years later. His death, possibly his resurrection, when he was on the cross in John 19 verse 30, he said it is finished. James would agree with me that Jesus did fulfill the law. Verse 17 says that he came to do that. Verse 18 says basically that the law was not passed till it was fulfilled. Till it was fulfilled. Now what is the implication there by Jesus? If the law was not passed until it's fulfilled, but he just said in the verse before that that he came to fulfill it, then he's actually saying that the law would pass when he fulfills it, which happened about 3 years after that. And so, instead of this passage helping James' position, it actually reduces his position. It actually teaches that the law was fulfilled in the time frame of the death and resurrection of Christ, and that it passed when it was fulfilled. And it therefore is no longer binding today. You read verse 19 about it to say, to teach that somebody can break even one of the least commandments of the old law. You'll be the least in the kingdom of heaven. Well, obviously, that's what verses 17 and 18 James achieved, and that's talking about until it's fulfilled, until the law is passed, nobody at that time could teach that any of the laws of the Old Testament don't have to be followed anymore. And that's why Jesus called the Old Testament law while he was there. But he's not talking about now, for example, circumcision. You teach that circumcision and Old Testament law is no longer binding today. Did you come under the censure of verse 19? Are you in the least in the kingdom of heaven because you teach that's no longer binding? No, you understand that the law was fulfilled and therefore passed, verses 17 and 18. And in your speech, you in effect admitted the Sabbath was part of this law because you used this passage to defend the Sabbath. And so Jesus, he's admitting this passage, the law includes the Sabbath. Jesus said he came to fulfill it, and that would pass when it was fulfilled. So it proves the Sabbath law has passed, just like you believe circumcision. And put up number 38. Then he asked me, well, the 10 commandments are gone past, why are 9 still valid? Well, we explained that last night. Let's talk about an illustration. Back in about 1700, the territories of this country in the Northeast were under the law of England. Okay? I'll just read my chart. This country at one time was under the law of England. When we broke relationship with that country, we severed responsibility to her law. Now, they had laws in that thing like don't steal, don't kill, and pay taxes to the king. When our lawmakers drafted a new law in the time frame of 1776 or 1790, they placed some of the good principles of the English law in it, like don't kill and don't steal. But this did not obligate them to adopt the entire English law, nor did it obligate the free people to continue observance of the old law. We're under the law of the United States government. We don't have to obey the law of England more. When a law is abolished, it is abolished. If any principle of the old law is to be in the new, it must be adopted therein. This, of course, must be stated in the new law. So the reason it's against the law for us to kill and steal, as far as government law, is because the United States law says that. But we don't have to pay taxes to the king anymore. That whole law, the law of England, has been abolished. The only laws that we have in common with them are those that were reinstituted under the new government law. It's the same way with this religious law. The whole old law, including the Ten Commandments and the Sabbath, has been abolished. There are some laws in the New Testament law that we have to obey that are the same as the Old Testament law, don't kill and don't steal. The reason they're binding is because the New Testament law teaches them. But the New Testament law never does teach us that we have to keep the Sabbath law. There is no instruction in the New Testament law to keep the Sabbath. We are not under the Old Testament law, we're under the New Testament law, Mark. And so, James, you're right. 9 out of the 10 commandments are in the New Testament law. I won't go through the whole chart, but you'll notice, no other gods before me. That's taught in 1 Thessalonians 1, verse 9. Don't kill, in Romans 1, 29. Don't commit adultery, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9. All 9 of them are in the New Testament law, and that's why they're binding. But the Sabbath law is never in the New Testament law. It's conspicuously absent. Ask yourself this. Why is homosexuality wrong? It's not in the Ten Commandments. Why is it wrong? talks in the New Testament condemns homosexuality? Now you get the idea. And then he mentions Genesis 2, verses 2 through 3. Now, James, we had a large amount of time last night arguing about when was the Sabbath instituted. You think Genesis 2 teaches that in the creation week it was instituted, but the Bible shows different. But since it doesn't really matter when the Sabbath was instituted, I'm not going to take a lot of time arguing about that tonight. Here, let me illustrate to show you that it doesn't matter. When were animal sacrifices instituted as being binding? Well, we know Abel performed animal sacrifices. So animal sacrifices were instituted from the very beginning. Does that prove they're still binding today? No. But it doesn't matter when something is instituted to prove whether or not it's binding today. It matters whether or not the New Testament binds it. It does not bind animal sacrifices, and neither does it bind the Sabbath. Circumcision was first found about 430 years before the law was given at Mount Sinai. Does that prove it's still binding today? James says no. Therefore, he ought to be able to see that even if the Sabbath was instituted in Genesis chapter 2, it's not binding today. Doesn't matter when it was instituted. The Bible says in Colossians 2 that it's been blotted out and done away. Now, I want you to notice on this point that the Sabbath law was never given to Gentiles, Mark number 1, but only to the Jews. Now, to begin with, recall a passage I brought up last night, Deuteronomy 4, verse 13. It says, He declared unto you His covenant, which He commanded you to perform, even the Ten Commandments. So, the covenant, when we talk about the Old Covenant, it includes the Ten Commandments. Now, notice Exodus 19, 3 through 5. Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called and sent out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, not the Gentiles, You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought them to myself. Who did he do this? Who did he take out of Egypt? That's what that's referring to. He brought them with eagle's wings out of Egypt. The Israelites, not the Gentiles. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, which we see from Deuteronomy 4, verse 13, includes the Sabbath, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people. And then just a few verses later, Exodus 20, verse 8, part of his covenant says, Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now who was that covenant between? God and the children of Israel. This verse makes it clear. Exodus 31, verse 13. Speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbath ye shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout the generations. Who is the you there? Children of Israel. It's identified in the text. Exodus 31, 16 and 17. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath. To observe the Sabbath throughout the generation. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel, not the Gentiles. Never was for the Gentiles. Now, yes, if the Gentile was converted to the Jewish religion, he was supposed to keep the Sabbath, circumcision, and the other laws and so forth, but the Gentiles were never obligated to keep the Sabbath. Ezekiel 20, 10 through 12, Wherefore I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt, brought them into the wilderness. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbath to be a sign between me and them. Who's of them? The ones he caused to go out of the land of Egypt. That's the Israelites and their descendants, not the Gentiles. Deuteronomy 5, verse 15. Remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt. Is that you, anybody in this audience? Or your ancestors? Were y'all slaves in Egypt? No, none of them. And that the Lord thy God brought me out here, therefore the Lord commanded me to keep the Sabbath day. Who? God commanded this to the Israelites, the ones that were brought out of Egypt. And so in conclusion, the Sabbath was a sign between God and Israelites, commemorating his bringing them out of Egyptian slavery, meaning it was peculiarly given to Israel, those whose ancestors had come out of Egyptian slavery. As far as I know, we're all Gentiles here. Not a one of us is from the children of Israel. We're not Jews. The Sabbath was never binding on the Jews, never intended for. And then he went through a timeline. He went through several passages, which included Ezekiel 20, and we'll get back to that, Exodus 16, and so forth. Let's address that timeline by looking at chart number 3. Thank you, Rodney. Now notice the Sabbath law in Exodus 31, which may have been part of the timeline, I'm not sure, verses 16 and 17 says, Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath. Notice who's that, the Gentiles or the children of Israel? To observe the Sabbath throughout their generations, it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. Between God and the children of Israel. Nobody here, not Gentiles. Now I want you to notice in particular this phrase, throughout their generations. What does that mean? That means throughout the Jewish generation, ending at the end of the Jewish dispensation when Jesus nailed the cross. Now, James will agree with that on all the rest of the points on this chart. Watch. Circumcision in Genesis 17, verse 12. He that is 8 days old shall be circumcised among you, every man child in your generation. the Jewish generation. Not for the Gentiles, not for us today. Passover, Exodus 12, verse 15. And this day shall be for a memorial. You shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generation. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. Who keeps the Passover? People today? No, the generation of the Jews throughout your generation, not the Gentile generation. Do you see that? You see how that works for the Passover? Offerings by fire. Leviticus 6, verse 18. All the males among the children of Aaron shall eat of it. It shall be a statute forever in your generation concerning the offerings of the Lord made by fire. James would agree those offerings are not binding today because it says they were bound upon those generations. The wave offering, Leviticus 23, verse 21. You shall do no servile work therein. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generation. James, I believe, will agree that the throughout your generations indicates that the wave offering, that obligation, stopped at the cross with the end of the Jewish dispensation. It was for the Jewish generation, the Day of Atonement, Leviticus 23, 31. You shall do no manner of work, it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. What does that mean? That we must keep the Day of Atonement today, or that throughout your generations means it ended at the end of the Jewish dispensation. In other words, this is your generation, meaning the Jewish generation. Feast of Booths, Leviticus 23:41. You shall keep it a feast unto the Lord 7 days of the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. Now notice, every time it says forever in your generations, forever in your generations, and that always means stops at the end of the Jewish dispensation. Lampstand and oil, Leviticus 24:3. Statute forever in your generations. Levite service, Numbers 18:23. But the Levites shall do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, and among the children of Israel they have no inheritance. Every time this phrase, forever throughout your generations, means that it stops at the end of the Jewish dispensation, meaning it does not go past the death of Jesus on the cross. Not under the new covenant, but one of death. James and Keith will agree with that on every point on this chart except the first one. Now go back to the first one. It says, there the children of Israel, not the Gentiles, are to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations. Why wouldn't it be the same thing there? Why not just take what the Bible means, says plain, and just accept it instead of trying to get around the plain meaning? You know, one never reads in the Old Testament, don't murder throughout your generations. You never read that. You won't read don't commit adultery throughout your generations. You won't ever read that. The Sabbath was for the Jewish generations, not the Gentiles. Now let's turn back to Ezekiel chapter 20. This was part of his timeline. And I want you to notice a passage that's very significant in Ezekiel chapter 20 that he left out. In verse 12 he read, moreover also I gave them my Sabbath. Now who's the them there? It says, to be a sign between me and them. He didn't identify for us who the them was, that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctified them. And then he read verse 20, and hallow my Sabbath, and they shall be a sign between me and you. Who is the you that he's talking to? That you may know that I am the Lord your God. Well, the beginning of the chapter is all talking about the house of Israel, how that they rebelled against God, verse 13. Notice in verse 10, it says, wherefore I called them, that's what he's talking about, that's what the Sabbath, the sign between God and them, wherefore I called them to go forth out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness. Is there anybody here that God brought out of Egyptian slavery and caused to go in the wilderness? Or any of your ancestors? No, not unless there's a Jew here. So even the passage he brought up in Ezekiel teaches that the Sabbath was a sign between God and the children of Israel only. Even the passage he brought up. And then he mentions that Jesus kept the Sabbath. And he's right, Luke 4:16 talks about that. Put up 29. Now, we mentioned this last night and brought this chart, but he never responded to this chart. Yes, Jesus kept the Sabbath. That's because he lived under the Old Testament law. Jesus also kept circumcision, Luke 2:21. And I believe everybody should turn to Luke chapter 5, verse 14, and tell me that if you believe that this is still binding. Jesus healed 10 people of leprosy. Only one came back to thank you. He says in Luke 5:14, tell no man, but go and show thyself to the priest, offer for thy cleansing. Now, he's already cleansed physically, so this is ceremonial cleansing, according as Moses commanded for a testimony unto thee. Now, this is part of the Old Testament law, what James would call ceremonial law. Jesus kept that law. He also kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread, something that James would say is not binding today. Well, if Jesus kept something, proves that we need to keep it, then this would prove that we have to be circumcised today, we have to keep the ceremonial aspects of leprosy cleansing, we have to keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread. No, Jesus did some things that we don't have to do because Jesus lived under a different law than us.
Now raise that up, Mark. In Hebrews chapter 9, verses 15 through 17, we read this. This will help explain it to you. For this cause, he, talking about Jesus, is the mediator of the New Testament, that by the means of death, or the redemption of the transgressions that were under the First Testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. For where a testament is, there must also of necessity be the death of the testator. That's saying the same thing, a testament and a will are the same thing. My mother has me as one of the four boys in her will. I'm to inherit 1/4, but I don't get that until she dies. The testament or the will is not enforced until after the death of the testator, my mother. Well, it's the same way with the New Testament, the New Covenant, the New Law. It does not go into force until after the death of the testator, who is identified here as Jesus. In verse 17, for a testament is of force after men are dead. Otherwise, it is no strength at all while the testator lives. So Jesus lived under the Old Testament law. So he had to keep circumcision. He had to keep the Sabbath. He had to keep the ceremonial cleansing law. He had to keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But it proves nothing about what we have to do today. But it does, that means we have to be circumcised. We have to keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread. We have to keep the ceremonial law. Do you see that? That's simple. And then he mentioned about Paul. Basically, Paul went in, we dealt with this last night. Paul went into the synagogue to preach on the Sabbath. That's right. Every time he went into the synagogue to preach, he was always to unconverted Jews. Just like I'm doing tonight. I'm going into a Sabbath-keeping church on the Sabbath to try to convert them. Does that prove that I keep the Sabbath? No. Just prove that I'm trying to convert people to the truth. Every time that Paul went into the synagogue, he was there to preach to either unconverted Jews, Acts 13, 14, 17, 2, and 18, 4, unconverted Gentiles, 13, 42, these were never Christians. Sometimes it was a doctrinal debate, like these past two nights, 17, 17, 19, 8. Always it was trying to convert people to the truth. I have also preached on the Sabbath at Sabbath-keeping churches, but just like Paul, it was not to celebrate the Sabbath with them, but to convert them to the truth. But when Paul met and worked with Christians, not with the Jews who were unconverted, but when he met with the Christians, it was on the first day of the week, Acts 20, verse 7, let there be no mistake about that. Yes, Paul tried to convert people who were still binding the Sabbath. Now, if you were back then and you were still binding the Sabbath, would you have let him convert you to the truth on the Sabbath question? I ask you that. Then he brought up Acts 16, verse 13. Put up 34. Yes, Paul went, and there's some ladies, Lydia, were meeting on the Sabbath to have prayer. But these were people who were not converted yet, not Christians. They're like Apollos in Acts 18. He was teaching the baptism of John. He didn't know any better. He was teaching something that was no longer binding. But Aquila and Priscilla taught him the truth. Paul taught Lydia and them the truth. Once they became Christians, Lydia and her household, we have no record of them ever meeting on the Sabbath. Yes, they were meeting on the Sabbath, but at that time they were unconverted, probably trying to practice at least some parts of the Jewish religion. But we do have an example of Christians coming together for worship on the first day of the week. Acts 20, verse 7. Upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, 1 Corinthians 10, 16 shows that eating the Lord's Supper. Paul preached unto them. So non-Christian example, that's Lydia, Acts 16, 13, she's not a Christian at that time, will not prove Christian practice. Thank you very much for your time.